Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Nervin, Daf Lamed Beis. We're starting with the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis. And with the new Mishnah, we're beginning now the following discussion. We are in the third parak of Erevin, and our topic of discussion has been and will continue to be Erev Tchum. How to set up your Erev Tchum. You want to extend your 2,000 amos so that you can walk now a little bit further than 2,000 amos. So what you want to do is you want to change your makom shvisa. Your point of center right now is where you normally are situated, where you're residing as Shabbos enters during the Benesh Mashos period. But now what you're going to do is you're going to just simply transfer and move your makom shvisa. So how do you do that? By putting food down somewhere where you can access that food before Shabbos. And so during the Benesh Mashos period, that food becomes your new makom shvisa, and now you're allowed to walk another 2,000 numbers. That's a simple roundup of Erev Tchum. What food can you use? That was our first discussion of the third parak. When the third parak began, all the way back in Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, so the Mishnah discussed using basically all foods except for salt and water, and the Gemara got into an involved and lengthy discussion exactly what foods you could use, and we discussed that at length. Then the Gemara talked about how much food to use. So that was basically shteis de'udos, two meals worth of food. I didn't raise this as an issue back then, but just something to consider. In other words, on Shabbos we have a mitzvah of eating three meals, right? Shal shudos. So we learned about that back in Masechta Shabbos. And meanwhile, for the Erev Tchum, you only need to set up something that is equivalent to two meals, but for another time, in terms of why should only be two meals. And then what we learned in yesterday's daf and daf lamed aleph was a discussion of the food having to be kosher, meaning food which is not asur ba'achila, and the Mishnah talked about it from an agricultural standpoint, meaning it can't be tevel, it can't be meiser where you didn't take off truma gedola, nor trumas meiser, can't be demai, actually can be demai, oddly enough, which the Gemara discussed yesterday. How could that be? You're not allowed to eat demai. Okay, but that's the... That's a sequence of the Mishnah as we've seen so far in the third parak. And now our Mishnah over here discusses the following. Now, to move my makom shvisa, so it requires me to put food down. Like in any arena in halacha, if I ask somebody to do it for me, so what do? Is that I appoint him as my shliach. I make him now basically a representative of me. And so once I hand it to the individual, he's my shliach, and then he'll put it down exactly where I asked him to put it down. And good. And what if I don't get word back that he did it? Can I assume that he did it? That's part of today's discussion in the daf. And we'll begin. We begin today in the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and the Mishnah begins. So let's say you appoint a shliach, but you don't make the best decision in terms of who you appoint as a shliach. So cherish or tevekatan. Cherish is a deaf mute in the time of the Mishnah, in the time of the Gemara. He had no das whatsoever. He was just simply an incompetent individual, mentally incompetent. Shota is somebody who is crazy, literally insane. And katan in a minor. So who, as I mentioned a number of times, is insane with a good prognosis. So the obiad misha inu mode be'eruv, or somebody who doesn't agree to this whole concept of eruv. Rashi gives the example of kusi. As the Gemara in just a moment will also give the example of kusi. But in other words, someone who subscribes to Torah Shebichsav, I'm totally okay with that which is in the Torah, but Torah Shebapeh, but all the oral tradition and the Gzeres Derabanan, I'm not subscribing to that. Misha Einu Mode BeEruv, he's just not buying into this whole Eruv idea. So rabbis came up with it. So these are the people that you select as your shliach. Again, poor judgment on the Mishalech, and the one who's sending, but the point the Mishnah is about to make is the following. Because you gave it to people who are either A, mentally incompetent, or B, somebody who don't subscribe to this, so Mishay Namodah Be'erev, and Erev, in all these cases, the Erev is not going to be a good Erev. Meaning, if all you did was just hand it to this person and say, okay, good, go, so either because of mental incompetence, or because of his hashkafa, his outlook on the whole development of Erev. So as a result of that, you cannot trust the fact that this person actually deposited the Erev exactly where you told them to put it down.
But what happens if you watch it?
Gemara's going to discuss your question. V'yamam alach lekabla mimenu areze Erev. Now, if you ask somebody to take it from him. So in other words, odd scenario in the Mishnah, you give it to the Katan, and then you go to somebody else and say, look, I just handed over my Erev to the Katan. Would you please go over to the Katan, take it from the Katan, and put the Erev down exactly where I asked them to put it down? Now again, it's a strange scenario. Why don't you just give it to this person, the competent person to begin with? Okay, but the Mishnah is teaching us a Chiddush, and the Chiddush is a very simple one. It works. If you tell somebody who is a Gadol to take it from the incompetent person that you gave it to, so then the Mishnah says, Harei Zeh Erev, that would in fact be an Erev. Now, the obvious question is, how do you know that there was a transfer between the Katan, Chereshota, or the and this person? So the Gemara is going to ask that very question, and we're going to come back and we're going to respond to that very question. In the meantime, however, the Gemara starts off, the Katan, Lava Amarav, Ahuna Katan, Govesa Erev. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have a statement by Rav Huna, which is that the Katan can go around and collect the Erev. So we're a little bit confused. Our Mishnah says that there's no way that you can appoint a Katan as the Shliach in order to perform the Shlichus of placing on your Erev. And meanwhile, Rav Huna says very clearly that you can have the Katan going around and collecting the Erev. So that's a problem. Lokasha kambe Erev etchumim kambe Erev echatzeros. So the Gemara says it's not a problem. It's not a difficulty because you got to remember there's two types of Erev. Erev Chum, Erev Chatzeros. Now there's a third, but I told you many times. We don't talk about the third one here in Masech Erevin, Erev Tafshilin. That's a different Erev. That's a whole different purpose to it. But in other words, in the two worlds of Erevin that we deal with, Erev Chatzeros, Erev Tchumim, in one case the Katan can be involved. And in another one of the Erevim, the Katan cannot be involved. Our obvious mission right now, our goal right now, is to figure out which one's which. And not only to figure out which one's which, but why? Why is it that for one type of Erev, the Katan can be involved in it, and for another type of Erev, the Katan cannot be involved in it? Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here is fascinating. Rashi says, Govez ha'erev mibnei chatzim ma'arev aleim, Rashi eruve chatzeros. So Rashi over here, I'll just give away Rashi before we read it inside. Rashi over here is going to say that when it comes to Erev Chatzeros, unification of all the members of the courtyard, so that you can have a Katan do. That's not a big deal. When it comes to Erev Tchum, so that you can't use a Katan, there you need an absolute Gadol. Now, let's see Rashi inside, because Rashi is going to explain why. Why should that be? So Rashi writes, Eruve Chatzeros, Eruve Rishusayu Ba'almahu. Because when you're talking about Erev Chatzeros, legally, it's not a big deal. Legally speaking, meaning, of course it's a big deal. Without Erev Chatzeros, you can't carry from the house to the courtyard, from the courtyard to someone else's house. Of course it's a big deal. But what Rashi's explaining over here is, because it doesn't require any type of legal prowess, there's nothing major happening legally, so you can get the Katan to do it. Let's see the words of Rashi. Eruve Rishusaya Ba'almahu. All you're doing is just unifying everybody. Hilkach mi meila mi arev. So really, Erev happens almost organically. It just kind of happens. The Alpha Gavdein Maisa Katan Klom, because as we know, legally speaking, the Maisa Katan, an act of a child, has no legal significance. But lo ichpat lam, but we don't care. Meaning, because in the world of Erev Chatzeros, we don't need a lot of legal significance. All we're doing is just simply unifying. Unification, there's no kinyan, there's no acquisition. We're just simply unifying. The child's collecting the bread from everybody's house. That could be done by a child, because you don't need such a legal act. So, kedidnan lakaman, balabayish, in fact, we're going to learn later on that if we have a Baal Bais who becomes a Shutaf together with a partner, so you don't need an Erev. Meaning that if there could be another form of unification, it doesn't have to be a Ruve Chatzeros. Okay, so in other words, you see that unification is not such a legally significant act. So Ein Tzarech La'arev. Ava Eruve Tchumim. But now we turn to Erev Tchum, which means what? I'm moving my point of center. My residence was here. Because now I'm going to put down my Eruv Etchum, my residence is now going to be over there. I'm making a transfer of residence. That's legally significant. Rashi says, Aknuye Shvisahu, V'katan Lo Alam L'mikne. So there, when it comes now to a kinyan, we're making a real acquisition, so then you can't have a katan involved, because a katan talking about acquisition now. Katan can't make an acquisition, so therefore, you need somebody who is a gadol, you need someone who is a bar das, a bar hachi. So that's why the katan cannot perform a ruvit chumim. So again, according to Rashi, how to be miyashiv Rav Huna's statement with the Mishnah, Rav Huna, when he says that a katan can go ahead and collect the Erev Chatzeres, it's specific to Erev Chatzeres because it's not a legally significant act. Again, I just want to try to explain this in better terms. It's very significant. You can't carry without the Erev Chatzeres. But there's no kinyan being done over here. No one's making any type of acquisition. We're just simply doing the mitzvah of Erev Chatzeres to unify everybody. You can have a child do it, as Rashi points out. There are other means to do it as well. It doesn't have to be the Erev Chatzeres. So there, a child can be involved in that. Masha'en came when it comes to Erev Tchum, because there it's a real kinyan, it's a real acquisition. I normally live here. I'm transferring my Makom Shvisa to over here, and because there's a kinyan involved, that's why you can't have a child involved. So says Rashi, that's the explanation of our Gemara. Please see on your own. Tosus over here agrees with the division of Rashi, meaning that our Mishnah is talking about Erev Tchum and Rav Huna is talking about Erev Chatzeres, but doesn't necessarily agree with this explanation of Rashi. And see Tosus Kan Be'Erev Tchumim, who gives a slightly different explanation in terms of why it should be so, why Erev Tchum is different from Erev Chatzeres. We go on in the Gemara, Obiyan Mishenu Mode Be'Erev. So Man Amar Rav Chista Kutai. So who's our Mishnah talking about when it says someone who's not Mode Be'Erev? So Rav Chista says our Mishnah talking about the Kutim. Now, Rashi said it back in the Mishnah, but of course Rashi got it from our Gemara over here. Now, Kutim, interesting. Kutim are a group of people. We know that when Melech Ashur, Sancheriv Melech Ashur, took the Aseres HaShvatim and removed them from the northern section of Eretz Yisrael, so he replaced them with a group of idolaters. All right, all this is found in Melachim. So he replaced them with a group of idolaters, and they kept doing their idolatry in the northern kingdom. We know that the lions came, the lions started attacking these group of Kutim. So what did they do? They said, you know, looks like we can't practice this idolatry in Israel, so we're going to convert. And then we know that for generations it became a major debate amongst the Tanaim, debate amongst the Amoraim. Right? These group of Kutim lasted for hundreds of years, even after they were, you know, right, they were there during the Second Temple period and beyond. So it was always a question of whether or not their conversion was good. Was it a forced conversion? Was it a good conversion? Right, kutigeri emesem, kutigeri arayosem. Now, let's, for our purposes, assume that there was a good conversion. Meaning, because if it wasn't a good conversion, then there's not much to talk about. You really can't appoint them as a shliach to do a mitzvah for you. So let's assume that they're Jewish, but the problem, of course, now is hashkafa. Meaning that they're Jewish, but they don't subscribe to the mitzvah of Eruv, and so therefore you can't use them as a shliach. The Gemara in Chulin told us that they kind of pick and choose, meaning that they don't even subscribe to all the mitzvahs per se of the Torah. But the Mishnah in the Gemara in Chulin told us that whatever mitzvahs they chose, they were very good about the mitzvahs that they do, but anything that they didn't choose as a mitzvah, really not at all compliant to the actual mitzvah. So I guess the point over here of our Gemara is that you can add Eruv to the list of things that they have never bought into. They never bought into Eruv Tchum. I guess you can also add Eruv Chatzeres as well, although the context of our Mishnah is talking about Eruv Tchum, and therefore they can't serve as a shliach. Okay, now we get on to the last case of our Mishnah, and this really will take us through the rest of today. And that is the following, that look, I hand my Erev over to Chereshot Vekat, and I say, go ahead, put it out there, you know, I want you to put it down, you know, right over there, and you give him very specific instructions. So the Mishnah says, that's no good, he's incompetent. You gave your Erev to someone who's incompetent, mentally incompetent, you can't rely on the fact that you put down the Erev. However, the Mishnah went on to say, But if you then instructed somebody who's competent to take it from the incompetent person you gave to, so the Mishnah says, how is the Erev? And the Gemara starts off with the obvious question. Well, how do you know that there was a transfer? Meaning, good, you first gave it over to Chereshot V'Katan. You then asked somebody to take it from Chereshot V'Katan. And how do you know that there was an actual transfer? The person you gave it to was incompetent. So, Kedam Rav Chista Ba'omed Varuhu, Achanami Ba'omed Varuhu. So, the Gemara quotes the name Rav Chista. You're right. The question is so strong. You have to say that you actually saw the transfer. If you didn't see the transfer, so then an Achanami, it's not going to work. So, in other words, you gave it to a Chereshot V'Katan. You then in turn asked a Gadol to take it from the Chereshot V'Katan. And then you then in turn saw the actual transfer. If you didn't, it's no good.
Isn't this guy that you assigned to also your shliach in a way?
Yes. No, he is your shliach.
No, the choreshot.
Yeah, right. The second guy. Yeah, correct. He's your shliach. So the Gemara says the v'dilma lo shakal minei. So the Gemara says, okay, so good. So now you actually saw the transfer. But now let's move on to the next concern, which is maybe he didn't set up the Erev. Meaning, okay, it transferred from the Katan to the person that you now appointed, but now maybe he didn't set it up. So the Gemara says, Kedam Rav Yechiel, Chazak Shliach Oseh Shlichuso, Hachanami Chazak Shliach Oseh Shlichuso. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have a general assumption, which is that if I ask somebody to do something for me, so I can assume that he did it. Meaning this is the concept now of Chazakah, whether there's an assumption that if I ask somebody to do something for me, he went ahead and he did it. And now the Gemara is going to get into a very interesting debate in terms of whether this is so. Can I walk away with this assumption? We speak about assumptions all the time throughout Shas, meaning what assumptions are you allowed to make and what assumptions you're not allowed to make. The power of chazakah is very strong, right? You could put somebody to death based on a simple chazakah. Right. For example, the Gemara Sanhedrin tells us a boy hits his father, okay, and makes a wound. So it's a capital crime, right? Subject to the death penalty. So the how do we know that that's dad? I mean, it's a simple question, but how do we know that that's dad? So there's a chazaka. There's a general assumption that that's father. We don't have to do any type of DNA testing. They didn't have DNA testing, meaning they're simple chazakas. They're assumptions that we make in halacha. And the Gemara there says, that's a chazaka. That's an assumption that we make. So chazakas are very strong. So certain assumptions are very strong. So over here, the question is, when I hand something over to a shliach, can I work now with the assumption he did exactly what I instructed him to do? So the Gemara says, absolutely. Chazaka, shliach osa shlichuso. V'heche edma d'Rav Chisra v'Rav Yechiel ahad edma d'Tanya. Nasna l'pil v'holicho, l'hokol v'holicho ein z'erov, v'yamam al'ach l'kabla hemenor ein z'erov. So the Gemara over there says, dealing with the following scenario, let's say I have a trained monkey, or oddly enough, I have a trained elephant. Okay, I don't know why elephant made it into the list of trained animals, but trained monkey, trained elephant, and I give my erov. And I say to them, okay, you know what to do. I say to my trained monkey. So the Mishnah says, that's not good. that's not gonna work. However, if I say to somebody, look, my Erev right now is with my pet monkey. Can you take my Erev from my pet monkey and set it up for me? Set up my Erev Tchum. So that would work. I raise the Erev. And again, the discussion is now going to be the same discussion that we just had. So the Gemara says, how do I know there was transfer from monkey to my shliach? So I'm Rav Chista ba'omed v'ra'uhu. Okay, that's the original spot where Rav Chista made the statement. And the Gemara says, and maybe he didn't accept the Erev, and maybe he didn't do what he was asked to do. I'm Rav Yechiel, achazak ha'shliach osa shlichuso. So Rav Yechiel says, yep, that's part of the assumption. If I ask somebody to do something for me, and he accepts the shlichus, so then the assumption is he's going to do exactly what I ask him to do. So now the Gemara says, So the Gemara brings down the following: Amar Rav Nachman b'shal Torin chazaka shliachos shlichuso b'shal Sofrim chazaka shliachos shlichuso. Rav Sheshes Amar echadze veechadze chazaka shliachos shlichuso. And now the Gemara gets involved in a very fundamental debate, and basically it goes as follows: Look, if it's a din derabanan, we are talking about din derabanan, meaning we're talking about erev tchum, erev chatzeros, erev tchum, classic examples of dinei derabanan. Rabbinic law. And then, of course, there's Shel Torah. In other words, there's halachas that are imposed upon us by the Torah. So if it's a derabanan, let's start simple, everyone's in agreement, I ask a shliach to do something for me, it's on a din derabanan, the safe assumption is he can do so. Okay? Right, Rashi b'shel sofrim. Take a look at the top Rashi on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. Samchinen acheska shliach. De'inami lo avid lo chamer isura kigone ruvit chumim. So Rashi, interesting. Rashi says, because what's the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is I ask a shliach to do something for me, and he didn't do it. Okay, let's even say he didn't do it. So Rashi says lo chamer isura. Well, there, the Chomer HaIsser isn't that bad, isn't that great, and so therefore it's okay. It's a very strange argument that Rashi is presenting to us, why by the Rabbanans, everyone's in agreement we could rely on the Shliach, because think about the worst case scenario. So
where do you send that Brit Milah when you make him oil your Shliach to the Minatorah? That's Minatorah, and you're assuming he's not going to...
No, it's not a question, right, to be clear, it's not a question that Shlichus works. Shlichus works. That's not the issue. We know shlichus works. The issue is, I appoint somebody to do something, and now without any more information, can I assume he did it? That's the question.
I mean, the other side is going to say, you have to be there to verify that he did it.
Do you have... That's the question.
What's the point of shlichus if you're not there?
Well, the point of shlichus is that it works even though I'm not doing it. Meaning, I ask...
Without your observation.
Doesn't matter. Meaning, I ask, right, I want to be Mekadosh a woman. So right now, I'm not, you know, I'm busy today. Okay, so I asked somebody else to do it. The fact that somebody else can do it, that's a big deal. Meaning, I'm not doing it, he's doing it, and yet it works for me. Power of attorney. Meaning, that already is point one, which is, again, that's not the issue. Of course that works. Even on Daraisas, it's going to work. It works on Kedushin, it works on Truma, right? Host of examples where it works. Good, it works. That's not the issue. The issue that we're discussing now is, without knowledge that he did what I asked him to do, can I now say, good, check, it's done. I asked the shliach to do it, now it's done. So on a din derabanan, the Gemara says there's no debate. Rav Nachman, Rav Sheshes, there's no debate. You can assume that he did it. Like Erev Tchum. It's really a wonder that Rashi says, because what's the worst that's going to happen? He didn't do it. And we're only talking about Issa derabanan. It's a strange way to put it. I understand why Rashi's doing that, but it's certainly strange. Bishel Torah, however, if it's a din daraisa, now we have a full-fledged machlokus between the Amoraim, between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman says, by Bishel Torah, ein chazaka. Meaning, we do not rely on the chazaka until we have absolute evidence. Right? Rashi says, for example, we saw with our own eyes that he did what I asked him to do. However, that's the opinion of Rav Nachman, and Rav Sheshes disagrees. And Rav Sheshes says no. That when it comes to din d'oraisa, when it comes to din d'rabanan, chazaka, we have a general assumption that the shliach did exactly what he was asked to do, even if I don't know any more information. And so now, our daf today, we are on the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, our daf today is going to discuss for an entire amud this question of, can I make that kind of assumption? I asked somebody to do something for me, he agreed to do it, can I now walk away saying it's done? Now, obviously not immediately. What kind of time frame are we talking about? I'll say, as your legal representative of the day, right? Reasonable time consideration, whatever that means. But that's, you know, I get to speak a little lawyer speak today. But it has to be a reasonable time consideration. But whatever that time consideration is, check it as if it's done. Okay, good. That is our topic of discussion. Again, Bishel Sofrim, there is no debate. The only debate amongst the Amoraim is Bishel Torah. So the Gemara now starts off the discussion with the following. I'm Rav Sheshes. Menamin aladinan. Mishikar v'omer hutar chadash miyad. V'arechokim mutarim mechatzos hayom ve'elach. Second day of Pesach. Okay, we don't get to experience this the way we once upon a time did while we had the Beis Hamikdash. Second day of Pesach, which by the way is not a yontiv. We're in Galus, so we think it's a yontiv. Not only do we think it's a yontiv, it is a yontiv here in the Galus. Okay, my good friend Rabbi Lerner spoke about making brachas on the second day of yontiv, right? Making brachas on minhag. That was his discussion recently. Anyway, but it's second day of Pesach is the first day of Chol HaMoed, but it's also the first day of the Omer. Okay, we know it nowadays as Sfiras HaOmer. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, what they would do on the second day of Pesach is bring the Karban HaOmer. That would be now the requirement of the second day. And first of all, say it's a Karban based on Zman, meaning the Torah says to bring on the second day of Pesach, Mimacharas HaShabbos, which we know through Tosha Baal Peh is a reference to Pesach, first day of Yontif. And now, with the bringing of the Karban HaOmer, the following happens. All the grain that grew over the past year, wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye, all the grain that grew over the past year now becomes mutter. What was it before? It was usser. What's the name of the usser? Chadash. And then when the karban is brought on the second day of Pesach, all those grains now become mutter, and now we're allowed to eat those grains. When exactly do those grains become mutter? It's very simple. With the bringing of the karban. Meaning it's the karban, which is the matir, that serves as what transfers or transforms the grain from being chadash to being what we call yashan. Now, let's say you don't live in Yerushalayim, and I can only imagine when the Beis HaMikdash gets built and the karban omer is brought, a text message goes out to every single person. And we get to see on our phone, the karban omer is brought, you're good now, you can eat your new grains. Because they're no longer new, they're now yashan, they're old. However, Beis HaMikdash Sheni, so they didn't have that kind of exciting communication. So how did everybody know that the Karban HaOmer was brought? The answer is assumption. They brought it. Now, you can't, at what point in the day do you assume? So the Mishnah tells us midday. Chatzos HaYom. So when you get to midday and you're living out in Haifa, or you right say now you look at your watch, right? 12 o'clock, 12 noon. I understand it's it gets a little bit more complicated than that. But 12 noon, good. In Yerushalayim, I know they brought the Karban HaOmer, right? And by the way, what are they? They're my shliach, and they're going to do exactly what they're supposed to do. So v'hachadosh da'araisahu. Now we're talking about an iser da'araisa. Eating grains before the bringing of the Karban HaOmer is an iser da'araisa. And meanwhile, I can safely assume that the Beis HaMikdash and the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash did exactly what they were asked to do. V'ktani rechokim mutar mechatzos hayom ve'elach. La mishum chazak shliach osa shlichuso. So Rav Sheshe says, what do you see over here? I am correct. Even by a da'araisa, you can assume that shlich does exactly what you asked him to do. Rav Nachman, what's the counter argument? How's Rav Nachman going to defend his position? Hasam kediktan in time lefisha yodim shein based in mesnatzlimbo. That's different. That's different. That's not a person. When it comes to a person, you cannot assume that he did exactly what he was supposed to do. That's a bezdin. That is the Kohanim working in the Beis HaMikdash under the auspices of Bezdin. Bezdin as an entity, of course you can assume that they're going to do what they're supposed to do. But we're not talking about the corporate entity of Bezdin, nor of the Kohanim. We're talking about just your friend. Can you assume that your friend did exactly what you asked him to do? And Rav Nachman will say, no, you can't.
The thing is that, in the strict sense of the word, are the Kohen really your agents? Because they're doing it for themselves also. Could they really be doing it for themselves?
Correct, but, both. I don't know.
I think that they're doing it, there's an added layer to that.
Okay, good. I mean, you're setting it up as if they're mutually exclusive, meaning they're doing it both for themselves and also they're serving as Yishliach. Good. Meaning, and as you're right, by the way, as far as doing it for themselves is concerned, they're obviously going to want to do it. But you're living out there in Haifa, and you don't know if they did it or not. You can assume they did it. You're right. In other words, maybe they're more motivated because it's going to help themselves as well. Now, Igadamri, now we're going to do this discussion again in the Gemara, a slightly different version where we start off by bringing it as a proof for Rav Nachman. I'm Rav Nachman, and I'm in a lot of time. I'm a fish. I'm a base of Misatsambo. Based in Udalo Misatsambo. Hashliach Misatsambo. Based in's not going to be lazy, but if he asks somebody to do something for you, you never know. He's got life. He may not, you may not be the first priority. So there's a chance that he may not do it. Therefore, you can't assume that he did it. Good. That's how it's a strong support for Rav Nachman. And Rav Sheshes Amalacha based in Ad Palka de Yomai, Shlich Kule Yomai. And what Rav Sheshes' defense is over here is going to be the following. Look. Beis Din, you're right. Beis Din is better than asking a friend to do something for you. Right? Beis Din is, that's their job. Meaning that's what they're supposed to do. So yes, you can assume. But Rav Sheshes will counter argue and say, and so is your friend. Meaning you ask somebody to do something for you and he agrees to do it, you can assume he's going to do it as well. What added dimension, what benefit is there based in over your friend? Where the Brisa says, don't worry, based in's not going to be lazy. It's only in the sense of time. Based in will take care of it right away. By midday, you can already say, look, the Omer was supposed to have been brought already today. Even though they have the entire day to bring the carbon Omer, based in's not going to be lazy. By midday already, they're going to bring it. My friend, who I didn't give him a time constraint, I just simply asked him to do something, so then I'm going to have to wait till what is considered a reasonable time in which he's going to do what I asked him to do. But the assumption is after the reasonable time, check. You can assume that he did it. So that's what Rav Sheshes will say in his defense. That Beis Din only gives you the advantage of midday. You can assume that they did it. I'm Rav Sheshes Menami Nala Detanya Isha Shesh La Le Do Ziva Mevi Omas Menos Nos Beshofer V'Tavas V'Ochas B'Kachim La Erev. Woman is either a Yoledes or she is a Zav Gedola. We know that for both of them, in order for the woman to either A, go into the base of Mikdash, or B, eat Karbanos, so she needs Kapara. She needs atonement. How does she achieve Kapara? By bringing Karbanos B'Yom HaShmini on the 8th day. Well, that's for the Zav Gedola. For the Yoledes, she has to bring it on either the 40th day or the 41st day or the 81st day, depending on whether it was a boy or girl. Either way, the point being, she needs to bring Karbanos. So, one of two ways to do it. The easy way and the easier way. The easy way is to bring the Karbanos to the base of Mikdash. She'll bring a pair of birds. One's a Chatas, the other's an Ola. Okay, that's the easy way to do it. What's even the easier way to do it? The easiest way to do it? Take money, put it in the Pushka. Okay, well, any Pushka? No. In the base of Mikdash, there was a pushka where it actually said on it the word kinim. These are for the pair of birds. You put the money in, and then what's going to happen is the kohanim do the rest of the work. They go into the pushka, they take out the money, they're going to buy birds with the money, and with those birds, they're going to offer the karbanos on your behalf.
How do they know it's yours?
Yeah, right. It's a good question. They don't know how to connect the karban to you, but for the points of simplicity, it works. This is the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us it works. This methodology works. And now, so Rav Sheshes now is going to offer the following argument, and which is, my time, look, you put the money in the Pushka, and the Brisa says, tonight, this woman will tovin the mikvah today, and tonight, she can eat karban. Because she put the money in the Pushka, it says, the old expression goes, it's money in the bank. Right? In other words, the Kohanim today, not tomorrow, today, we'll go into the Pushka, buy her Karbanos, offer the Karbanos for her, and it will all happen today. And the woman doesn't have to know anything more than that. She can just turn around, go home, and tov on the mikvah, and then eat Karban tonight. Okay, and Rav Sheshes says, isn't that a wonderful proof? That you ask somebody to do something for you, the assumption is they're going to do it. Rav Nachman asked him, "Could the Rav Shmai, the Amar Rav Shmai, Chazak ain Beis Din Shekohanim, Om de Misham Ashiach Lukol Masha B'Shofar?" So, and Rav Nachman will say once again, "No, that's Beis Din. That is a responsible entity of Beis Din, or in this case, Beis Din Shekohanim. But it's the same basic point, meaning that's their job. Their job is to take care of it. They're going to take care of it. You ask a friend to do something for you, you can't compare your friend to a Beis Din."
But with the Kohen, is that a shlichut relationship?
I mean, it's funny. From our Gemara over here, absolutely. In other words, what else do you want
to... Yeah, because the woman herself is not able to do it. I mean,
She needs...
Yeah, it has to be, you know, the yonet...
Right, correct. The woman can't go into the basement. Right, she can't do the actual avoda. Right. You're right. But yes, it's a shlich. It's a shlichus. I'm Rav Sheshes ben Amin al Adetanya Amal Chaver Tzev Alaka Lecha Teinim Mitteina Si Ocho Mehem Arai Asrin Vaday. Okay, and now we go now to a third source, which in this case will start off as a support for Rav Sheshes, and that's the following. I said to my friend, "Look, I have figs growing in my yard. Go ahead, collect figs." So Lecha Lecha Teinim Mitteina Si Ocho Mehem Arai Asrin Vaday. So they can eat them arai, meaning as a snack. We just discussed this the other day, that without bringing the fruit into your house and making a pile of them, so there's no yechi of trumas amaisros, which means that it's not tevel, and therefore you're allowed to snack from it. However, if you're going to eat a meal of these figs, so now you got to take off trumas amaisros, vadai, not meaning... Not as a, maybe he took off, not as a suffix, but in other words, you know you need to take off Trumas and Maisers. However, if I give him a basket and I say, fill the basket with my figs, so basically I'm asking him not to make little snacks of my figs, but a real meal of the figs, so, so once again, you want to eat one fig, so that's fine. However, you want to now sit down and have a meal which is kavua, so now, ma'asrin demai. You take off trumas ha'maisros, but not with real certainty, but as if it's demai. Demai, we know, any produce can purchase from an ma'aretz. You take off Trumas HaMaestros, not as a certainty, but just simply as a possibility that he didn't take off Trumas HaMaestros. We just spoke about Demai yesterday's daf as well. Now, Bamedra, Mamor, and Bamaharitz, that's only if it's an Amaharitz. Ava Bechaver, Ochel, Veinasar, Chlaasar, Divrei Rebbe. But if it's a Chaver, meaning so the person that you ask to go ahead and to collect the figs is somebody who is a Shomer Torah or Mitzvos, someone is careful about the way he performs mitzvos, so now you take the figs from him, he took off Trumas HaMaisros, it's not even a question, you can go ahead and you can eat it. And Rashi Ben Gamliel argues and he says, no, he's not going to take off Trumas HaMaisros, why not? Because we have this halacha, it's called that when you take off Trumas HaMaisros, that which you take off Trumas HaMaisros has to be close to the other food which is being misukan, which is being corrected. So this is what's called minamukaf. And over here, when the chaver takes off Trumas, he's not going to take off Trumas HaMaisros because it would require him to take off Trumas HaMaisros onto fruit, and they're not proximate to one another, they're not close to one another. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, therefore, you can't, he did not, the chaver did not take off Trumas HaMaisros, and so therefore, if you're going to eat it, you have to take off Trumas HaMaisros. So again, the case is, I asked somebody to go ahead and to collect fruit from my orchard, and basically, Rebbe says, it's fine. He not only collected the fruit, he took off Trumas HaMaisros. Basically, you appoint him as a shliach, and he did exactly what you could do, and assurances that he did it. So now, Amar Rebbe, Nirin Divrei Medivrei Abba. So, and Rebbe says, you know, I got to tell you, I see more correct than my father. Okay, I know it's, we spoke about this a number of times, how can sons argue with the father in Torah, but he's doing so right now. I seem to be more correct than my father on this issue. Mutav shiach shedu chaverim lechom shalom and amukav v'lo yochlu la'ama aretz tevalim. Because look, when they're going out in the field, yes, there's this halacha of shalom and amukav, that when you take off Trumas HaMaisros, the produce that you're taking off has to be right next to the produce in which you're correcting. That's all true, but that is a lighter halacha, if I'm allowed to say that. The Gemara will, so I'm allowed to. That's a lighter halacha than rather to give fruit, which is uncorrected fruit, untithed fruit to somebody, eating tevel, that's an iser, misa b'dei shamayim, no way the chaver would give fruit to somebody else that is untithed. Of course he would tithe the fruit, and yes, he would be violating the iser of shalom and amukov, but that's a lighter iser. That's exactly Rebbe's point. In fact, Rashi, in fact, writes over here that if he didn't do it, it'd be lifnei iver. So Rebbe says there's no way the chaver was asked to collect fruit from the field. Of course, he's going to take off trumas and meisos. Now, ad kan lo pligi ala damar savan echshadu, mar savan lo nechshadu. Now, look, there's a debate over here between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, but it's really a constricted debate. The debate is all about, would the chaver, is he ready to violate this lighter iser of shalom and amukov? But look, if that weren't an issue, if that factor were removed from the whole discussion, it is clear, according to everybody, that if I ask the chaver to collect fruit for my orchard, he's going to take off trumas and maestros. I can assume that as a fact, that he did that. And so Rav Sheshet says, so once again, look where I'm standing. I seem to be standing on very comfortable ground, because I maintain even by the Araisa, a shliach does exactly what he's asked to do. Now, by the way, just as a point of interest, over here, taking off trumas and maestros on figs, is that a mitzvah d'araisa, or is that a mitzvah d'rabanan? So according to many Rishonim, that's only a mitzvah d'rabanan. So it's a little bit of a head-scratcher, very good. It's a little bit of a head-scratcher over here that our Gemara, Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman are arguing, look, by d'rabanans we all agree. Where we disagree is them by d'araisas. And here, Rav Sheshet is using this as a proof, but we're talking about taking trumas and maestros off of figs. Which is what? So presumably it's only a mitzvah d'rabanan. And so therefore, how does that become now a proof? Take a look at the bottom Tosas on the Amud. Tosas says something very interesting. Alpha gav dem meister peres midrabanan. Taking off meister off of fruit, meaning outside of grapes and olives. Grapes and olives, everyone, we all agree it's daraisa. We all agree. The Torah says so. There's nothing to agree to. Right? Taking off trumas and meister on grapes and olives, it's a mitzvah d'rabanan. Mitzvah daraisa. What about other fruit? So Tosas assumes it's a derabanan. So how does that now become part of our discussion? So Tosas writes, "Afagav the meister peres midrabanan, v'rav Nachman moded b'shal sof from chazak shliach chosah shlichuso, kaven de iker she meister min a Torah chashiv like kishal Torah." Since fundamentally taking trumas and meisros is a mitzvah daraisa, so here in our discussion we could file this under the Araisa. Okay. Again, difficult. I understand it's difficult, but you got to say something. You got to give some sort of lend some sort of weight to the argument over here. Good. Okay. So good. So now Rav Sheshet says, look where I'm standing. I'm standing on very comfortable ground, because over here I find that the shliach is doing exactly what I asked him to do. And I didn't have to ask him, and I don't have to ascertain. And the assumption is he did it.
This is even more removed from shlichus. He didn't specifically tell him.
Right. Point very well taken. It's a tacit shlichus over here. But again, the assumption is he did it. Rav Nachman asked him, "Kid Rav Chanina Chuzai Dam Rav Chanina Chuzai Chazakahu Achav Hashenu Mosi Dav Hashenu Masuka Mitachas Yado." So again, Rav Nachman will tell you, no, it's not a proof. Because over here, what are you asking this guy to do? To hand fruit over to somebody else, which is eino mesukan, meaning even if I didn't, and perhaps this is your point, even if I didn't ask him to do it, he would never hand untied fruit over to somebody else. Meaning, and allow and aid and abet somebody else in violating an issur d'araisa with a punishment of misa bidei shamayim? That's crazy. So Rav Nachman will tell you, if it's shlichus where there's no other mitigating factor, can't assume that the person's going to do it. Over here, no way a chaver would simply hand fruit over to somebody else, which is essentially usser. It is isser. It wouldn't happen. So that's a mitigating factor. And Rav Nachman says, obviously, this cannot serve as a proof for anything. Okay, now just, we got to tie up one loose end of this brisa that we just discussed. and has the following. One guy asked another guy to go out to the field and collect figs. Who asked whom? Meaning, the person who did it, was he a chaver, was he an amaretz? Amamar. And the person who was asking, what is he? Look, the amaretz was speaking. Who is he speaking to? So Elam Amaretz Chavrei Ma'asran Demai. So is he speaking to another Amaretz? Was the conversation over here between two Amei Ha'aretz? So the Gemara says, well, that's difficult to understand, because the ruling of the Braisa was take off Trumas Maestros as if it were Demai. Now, the whole point of Demai is I got it from an Amaretz, and he may not have taken off Trumas Maestros. If the recipient of this produce is an Amaretz, so it's a strange halacha. We say to him, you know, treat it as if it's Demai. Well, right. I happen to also be an Amma Aretz. And what do you mean we don't take off Trumas Maestros? Sure we do. I mean, he's not going to listen to this halacha of Demai to begin with. So Mitzai, Salaba Amma Aretz to Kamala Lechaver. So it must be that the Amma Aretz said it to a Chaver, Ema Seifa. So now the Gemara says, okay, but it just, fine, I get that part. Where it's the chaver who was the one who was receiving the fruit, but then you move on in the brisa and you realize the rest of the brisa doesn't click. Near, because Rebbe makes the argument near midivrei Abba mutav sheyichshdu chaverim lechom shalom and amukav ve'al yachilu la'ame aretz tevelim. So ame aretz ma bayasam, meaning they're not going to hand over produce to an Amaretz. What do you mean, produce to an Amaretz? Didn't we just conclude that the person who was receiving the fruit was a Chaver? So Amaravina, Reisha B'Amaretz, Shamal Chaver, Seifa B'Chaver Shamal Amaretz. You're right. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to separate the two parts of the Braisa. The first part of the Braisa, the conversation was, the Amaretz was asking the Chaver. The second part of the Braisa was the Chaver asking the Amaretz. And you have another chaver over listening into this conversation. Rabbi Saver also chaver ochel ve'inosar chlaser devade yisuri meiser ha'u chaver kama ilave. In other words, the chaver overhearing the conversation realizes, oh no, fruit's going to get handed over to another chaver. I'm going to take off trumas and maestros. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer lo yochal achi hasal afishal nechshdu chaverim lechom shalom in amukaf. And the other and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion no, because that would require the second chaver to take off trumas and maestros when they are not proximate to one another, and a chaver wouldn't do that. Rabbi mutu sheyechshdu chaverim lechom shalom in amukaf vayechulu ame arts tevalim b'maika miflegi Rabbi saver nichale lechaver delavid hu isuri kalila. Rabbi says, look, here are the choices of the chaver. Either I violate an iser kalila, literally a lighter iser, meaning this halach of shalom and amokov, right? Which is, I have produce in my own home. I'm gonna designate the produce of my own house, shumas and maestros, so that the produce that the amaretz now is bringing over to the other chaver is going to in fact be corrected. Okay, it's not the preferable way to take off Trumas Maestros. The Trumas Maestros that you take off have to be right next to the rest, the remaining produce. But I'll violate that quote-unquote lighter iser so that when my friend eats his produce, he's not eating tevel.
But this second cover recipient, isn't he assuming that it's the Maya when he gets it from the Amaretz?
Correct. But if another cover overhears it, so Rabbi says you can assume that the cover takes it off. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Saver Nichalel Chaver Delavid Amaretz Yisuri Raba VeIlu Afilu Yisuri Kalila Lo LeAved. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says no, meaning that from the Chaver standpoint, look, the Amaretz, he's got his issues. I'm not going to violate any Isser, not a major Isser, not even a minor Isser, so that the Amaretz will be saved from eating tevel. Really what this engenders is a very interesting discussion. Basically, do I take a spiritual hit, even if it's a lighter one, so that a friend of mine will not be violating a major iser? Okay? Where did we have this discussion? Do you remember? Beginning of Masechta Shabbos, where we had exactly this discussion. What was the Gemara's conclusion over there? Don't do it. Don't take any type of spiritual hit so that your friend will be saved from a major iser. So it's a little bit interesting that the Gemara in Shabbos, the beginning of Shabbos, says not to take any type of spiritual hit and not to violate any iser, even a lighter iser, so that your friend will be saved from a greater iser. And our discussion over here, at least according to Rebbe, is no, do it. Take a bit of a hit so that your friend will not violate a greater iser. Who notes, just give me a moment, who notes that this is an issue? Top toes, folks. Please, if tomorrow, I'm already a little bit behind, but if tomorrow, if I have time, I'll go through some of the Tosfos over here, where basically, you know, he wonders, why here is Rebbe telling you it's okay, right, violate the Isra of Shalom and Amukov, so that nobody else eats Tevel, and meanwhile, the Gemara in Shabbos says, don't you dare violate an Isra Derabanan, so that somebody will be safe from an Isra Daraisa.
In this case, the first cover, does it mean stuff have an Isra issue also on top of that?
Okay, right. Very good. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow, maybe I'll tie up this loose end. And we'll pick it up tomorrow also with the new Mishnah. Rabbi Hananya, I'm sorry, continue Refu Shlema 4, Ben Yemen Zevakon, Ben Shara Rivka, 4, Rafal Zak Avram, Ben Yakir Avigal, Rabbi Hananya, Ben Akasha Amar, Atzik Hashbar, Zak Sofi, Chachim, Ben Tor, Mitzvah Shanemar, Nechafetz Amansi, Koyak Dil Tor Avi Adir.